Welcome to TechEd New Zealand. How's everyone doing? Enjoying it so far? Day one, everyone's still wide awake, so excellent. If you come to my session on Friday, I'll reevaluate you. My name's Nick Harris. I'm a senior technical evangelist for Microsoft. I reside in Redmond, but I'm actually from not the US. Let's have a poll of hands because people always seem to get it wrong. Who thinks I'm from the UK? One guy. Are you from the UK, sir? Okay, that's good. Who thinks I'm from South Africa? One? Okay. Australia? Okay, and everyone else just doesn't know. Okay, I'm from Australia, so thank you for having me back down this side of the world. Today we're going to talk about developing connected Windows Store apps with Windows Azure Mobile Services. And this is an overview, so we'll step through most of the core functionality of the service today. And in my deep dive session on Friday, we'll go a lot deeper and look at a lot of the new tooling in VS 2013 for building out your mobile services. So the agenda, we're going to talk about what mobile services are. We're going to look at data storage for your apps. We're going to look at push notifications, so delivering tiles or toast notifications to your Windows Store apps in this case. We're going to look at auth, and we're going to look at the scheduler and scaling. Hopefully we've got some Q&A time at the end. Right, so what is mobile services? So Windows Azure Mobile Services is a turnkey backend solution for your mobile apps. Now when I talk about mobile apps, I'm not just talking Windows Store or Windows Phone, we're also talking about iOS, Android, or any device that can actually talk HTTP. In addition to that, we also have client SDKs for websites, and I'll point them out in a bit. So under mobile services, we provide a number of services within this actual service. The first one is data storage. So if your client app wants to persist data off device, we provide a means for you to do that. We also provide APIs for sending push notifications to all the popular consumer device platforms, like WNS for Windows Store, we'll see that today, MPNS for Windows Phone apps, GCM for Android applications, and APNS for iOS-based apps. We'll look at auth, how you can actually secure your data on the server side and return back perhaps data only for the current user. We'll look at server scripts as a way of writing business logic on the server side. We'll look at scale out, how you can scale your solution as your user base grows. Logging and diagnostics, so these are typically useful when you want to debug your service. And we'll look at the scheduler, which provides basically a scheduled script execution for you so you can do things as a background task on the server. So let's get started with a basic getting started demo here. Probably need this one down here. Okay, sorry. I forgot I had to type. My bad. There we sort of go. Great. Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to jump into the Windows Azure portal here. Now the Windows Azure portal is located at manage.windowsazure.com. That's fun. Always nice to start with an error. Wonder if the network's there. There we go. That's better. And of course we've got all of our other services available here. The one which we're going to focus on today is mobile services. So I can click into this. You can see I've got a number of mobile services already, but what we're going to do is we're going to start by creating one. So we click New, Compute, Mobile Service, Create. Then within here we can actually go off and define what we want to call our mobile service. Who here wants to throw out a few names for our mobile service? Anyone? Kiwi. That's a good choice. I'm not sure if it's taken or not. There you go. So it's available. Now this is the subdomain name for our mobile service. And it basically provides, you know, a public URL that you can hit to go and perform those, you know, auth operations or storage operations or whatnot. The next thing that we need to do now that we know where our web endpoint is to go off and say, where do we want our data stored? So we've got a couple options here. Out of the box, we provide a free 20 meg DB, or you can go off and create a new SQL database instance. Now this is Windows Azure SQL DB up within Windows Azure, or you can use an existing SQL DB instance within Windows Azure. And we'll talk about the existing option in a bit, but for now I'm going to create a new SQL DB instance, and now I choose a region. Now this region that I'm selecting here is purely for my web tier. I'm going to select East Asia, hit next. So now that's basically the sort of web UI or web tier configured. We're going to go and say, whereabouts in East Asia are we going to store this DB? So this DB is going to go into my East Asia server. Hit OK. We provide a server login and password. And hit go. So already now, what's happening is the turnkey mobile service that we talked about is going and being provisioned. So this typically takes about 20 to 30 seconds. And with that 20 to 30 seconds, you have the DB created within your logical SQL DB. You will have your web tier created with all those CRUD operations for, you know, your data, for your custom APIs, for auth, for sending push notifications and whatnot. So really, there's quite a lot of stuff going on here in quite a short amount of time. And what we've really tried to do is make building backends for your mobile apps incredibly easy. We don't need to like go out and build, say, a web API. Web API is a good option, but you have to go and know how to sort of provision a website, how to deploy to that website and whatnot. With this, it's simply a turnkey operation. And this should be ready here in a sec. Any questions this early on? No? Could ask how come it's taking so long, but it's already done. So here, what we can do now is we can click into Kiwi. And now this is what we call the quick start. Now, this quick start tab basically allows us to go off and pull down a prepackaged solution that demonstrates just the core CRUD of functionality of mobile services. And what we'll do is we'll take this application and we'll build it out throughout this presentation. So you can see here that we can choose our platforms, Windows Store, Windows Phone, iOS, Android, HTML, and JS. We're going to deal with Windows Store apps in this session, and we've got two options: connect an existing Windows Store app, which has basically a connection string, or we can create a new Windows Store app and pull down this sort of pre-provisioned VS solution. And I want to use this so we've got sort of a base application and something that we can sort of dig through the code and then extend. So the first thing you need is VS 2012 Express. Or you could be using VS 2013 Preview, or RC as they announced today, I believe. You can do this second step here, which basically creates a table. Now this is a table. It's a simple task list app that we're going to download here. There's a table for tasks. We're going to call it to-do item. Now this button is essentially a shortcut for performing operations on this data tab. You can see that there's a to-do item table here, and I could equally go off and provision more tables as I wanted them for my solution. The one thing I want to show you here before we jump back to the quick start is that this table is provisioned, but it only has one column. So we're going to look a little bit around how mobile services scaffolds your DB for you based on the entities you're passing up. So we'll come back to this piece in a second. So we're already at step two. So the third step in this case is to download your own flavor of sort of prepackaged solution. We do have a C++ client SDK as well. Who's a C++ dev in the room? Awesome. We figure you guys are so awesome, you don't need a sort of sample application to get started. You're just going to download the SDK and go for it, right? So right-click, hit Save As. I'm going to go and drop this in my most important folder on my machine, my dev folder, and we're going to extract out this sample solution. Pop it open in VS 2012. And let's just get started by running it, then we'll start looking at the code. All right. Probably any second now. There we go. So this is our task list application or to-do app On the left here, we have a place where we can go and basically add tasks. On the right is where you'll see the tasks that have been persisted to the cloud. So the first thing here that we probably want to do is do some sightseeing. Probably spelt wrong. My spelling is horrible. In NZ. Next thing we want to do is no failures in the demo, apart from typing. So in the time that I've typed that in and hit save, what I'd like to really show you is that that's actually going, hitting the server, and writing data to our table. So if I click in here, you can see already that we've actually got those two items persisted up to my mobile service. Zoom in there. Right, so that was basically a simple insert operation. If I go and say, click on one of these, that's performing an update operation to set it to complete. I've also got the capability to query data back from the server as well. So let's go back and see that this will now change to one of those to true. And of course, we're able to query this. Now, if you see here, we've actually got two extra columns. We've got the text and complete column, and those columns have actually been scaffolded by mobile services within our underlying SQL DB. So with this service, I've actually not had to write any T-SQL or any of the plumbing to go and persist these entities. It's all provided out of the box. So let's jump into the code and have a little bit of a look at how easy it is to sort of start writing solutions using the client SDK for mobile services. So the first thing that we've sort of got here in this solution explorer that I'd like to point out, or this solution, is we've actually got a reference to the mobile services client SDK, and that's a NuGet package. So if I go into my packages config here, you can see that Windows Azure Mobile Services is installed. If you're doing this with an existing app that you've got today, you can simply right-click, manage NuGet packages, go online and search for Windows Azure. Ryan's in the room somewhere. I should have probably turned off those notifications. But you can see this is the NuGet package that's already been installed. Now, let's have a look a little bit at the code that you'd utilize to actually build out or connect to your mobile service, as is done in this sample. I'm going into the app.xaml.cs, and you can see the first thing we've got here is we're newing up an instance of the mobile services client. So this is your client proxy that essentially allows you to communicate with your mobile service. It's got our kiwi.azuremobile.net endpoint, and it's got an application key to basically ensure that only clients that have the app key in this case can actually consume that service endpoint, so it's not publicly readable by everyone. So that's our client, and then if we actually want to go off and perform those CRUD operations, which we saw within the client app, we've actually made it really easy to do. We've focused a lot of time on making the client API really simplistic and sort of abstracting away any need for you to know anything about HTTP web request or HTTP client or REST semantics. So let's have a look at this. The first thing that we've got is our to-do item, which is serialized over the wire up to our mobile service. It's got an ID, so that's the ID column, primary key within the DB. And then we've just got two simple properties on this, one bool, one string. Now the JSON property here is essentially a way that we can instruct our mobile services how it should go and serialize this property as a column within the DB. And say, for instance, if we had a DBA that really wanted everything with underscore col or something like that, prefixing all the columns, we could simply do it here like this, and mobile services would respect that when it created our actual table. So in this case, we've got text and complete. Now, to actually start working with that to-do item table, we simply say app.mobileservice, that's the instance from our other class that we looked at, get table, pass in the generic to-do item. So if you had your own entities within the business domain of your application, it's simply generic, so it shouldn't be too much of a problem to go off and use this. So we say get table on to-do item, and now we've got a handle to the to-do item. To perform an insert, it's a simple insert async call, and you pass in a newed up instance of that entity. If we wanted to perform an update, again, simple one-liner, update async, delete as well, one line, delete async, and of course, As far as querying is concerned, we provide a rich querying capability here. So you can use where and then a link expression to go and filter the return data set to say, send me all the tasks that aren't yet complete back from this service. So that's the basic sort of CRUD functionality. Thanks. Sorry, guys. Make love to the camera. Okay. So that's my modeling career. I've been working on it. And that's the basic CRUD functionality of mobile services. So let's jump back to the deck here and start talking a little bit about what's happening under the hood here. So that data was actually stored within a SQL database up in Windows Azure. If we had chosen the option to use an existing DB from within Windows Azure, what would happen then is you're basically creating a multi-tenant DB that multiple mobile services can all point at. So if we had, say, 10, 20, 30 mobile services, we can use one DB for all of that data if we wanted to and partition out individual mobile services as we saw fit. Now, the way it goes off and essentially ensures that, you know, if you've got a collision in terms of the table names, how we partition that out is we partition that table out by schema, and the schema will be your mobile service name. So if I had two mobile services, AppX, AppY, and both of them had to-do items, so it would just be appx.to-do-item and appy.to-do-item. And of course, as part of the provisioning process, we go and provision a new SQL user that has restricted access only to the schema of that particular mobile service. And that's the context that any queries or whatnot that mobile services is executing will be done as that user. So the user for AppX couldn't query data from AppY unless you explicitly went in and changed permissions to do that. As far as managing your data, some people don't particularly like the concept of, hey, my data is just going into the service and it's magically, you know, being persisted. Some people will want to go in and say, you know, manipulate that data in whatever form that they typically prefer, and we provide means for you to actually get at that. So all that data, it's still yours, it's still there, and you can still use the tools you're familiar with to go and manipulate that. You could use a Windows Azure portal to truncate data if you wished. We've got the SQL portal. Who's used the SQL portal within Windows Azure? Who likes it? All the hands went down, okay. Just a little poll I like to run. We've got SQL Management Studio, obviously. Who uses SQL Management Studio? Almost everyone. So you can connect to that SQL DB with SQL Management Studio. All you have to do, I'll show you how to do that on Friday, but all you need to do is just enable a firewall rule that gives your IP address access to that SQL DB, and then you can connect up to it using tools you're familiar with. REST API if you want to go and program out against this, and CLI tools if you want to automate some of this functionality. So the REST API just for tables, obviously we've got more around auth, et cetera. It all sits under your mobile services subdomain, WAC tables, and we support the post, get, patch, and delete operations there. And you can see that that's a simple OData query that we're using for read operations. The reason I want to point this out is because whilst we provide that really simple to use client SDK, there are still developers out there that may be developing, say, for embedded platforms that perhaps, well, which today don't have a supported client SDK. So if you can talk REST, you can talk to your mobile service. I've used this, basically the spec to go out and write a .NET micro framework client SDK for mobile services. So you could collect sensor data and push that up into a mobile service. So if you can speak REST, you can still use mobile services. Now we talked about dynamic schematization, and basically this is the way the mobile service determines what T-SQL type to use when it goes off and scaffolds that particular table. So if anything numeric is being passed up, JSON's the serialization format that we used for mobile services. If anything numeric is passed up, we store it in a float with 53 precision. Boolean goes a bit, date time to date time offset, and string to nvar char. Now this is a very sort of limited small subset in terms of this mapping. That's what it is today. We're working on support for sort of making this sort of, I guess, more granular and giving you more control over this. So, we talked a lot about just persisting data, but anyone building a client application that connects to a web tier will typically want to do things like perform some form of business logic on your server side, perform validation of that data on the server side. It's not, you know, acceptable to just validate on the client in most cases. You also want to scrub and check that data on the server side. So we provide what we call server-side scripts as a means of intercepting that CRUD operation pipeline and going and writing your own business logic to do whatever it is you'd like to do with that particular data and request. By default, our server-side scripts will just pass that data through straight to SQL, and it also basically allows you to fully customize the flow of the logic on the server side. So I think what we'll do is we'll have a look at that in a second, but one of the things that we've got within server-side scripts is essentially what we call node modules. Now, these are modules that give you sort of bite-sized pieces of functionality or an API that your server scripts can consume. So by default, we have a number of scripts installed on the server, some like request, console for logging, MS SQL if you want to run or execute a pure SQL string. Azure is the Azure Node SDK, and that's available if you want to do things like talk to blob storage or table storage or a queue or something like that. The push namespace has all of those push APIs for WNS, MPNS, and the others, which we talked about earlier. And the ones on the right there are actually offerings that we have in the Windows Azure Store, and all of them have a free tier. So essentially, if you wanted to send email from a server-side script, you would just enable SendGrid, and then you could require SendGrid and compose an email as someone inserts an item. So it could be an order or whatnot. Pusher is essentially a socket-based solution for eventing on the web. So in the micro framework example I discussed, as soon as I was sending sensor data up, I was using Pusher to send that sensor data out to any listening clients. And I built a web page. That web page subscribed to that particular channel, and then it was able to live graph the sensor data coming out of my device. There's a blog on it on my blog. And Twilio, of course, if you want to send SMS. So let's have a look at server-side script. So I'm going to jump back to my service here, and you'll see in the to-do item table, we're still under the data tab, we've got this script option. So if I click into script here, what we've got is we've got script hooks that we can go and write our own code within to go and see, say, you know, what we should do on update, insert, delete, or read. We're going to work with insert. We're writing into the portal here. I'll demonstrate the VS 2013 tooling that gives you this functionality directly within VS on Friday. Today's just 2012. So this insert operation is what's executed. Request execute will insert the item being passed up to the to-do item table. User is basically the authenticated user, or unauthenticated if you've allowed that via permissions, and request is the current request. So what we're going to do is some simple validation. We're going to say item.text, that was one of the properties on our entity, length. The length of the text property is less than 5, then I want to say this is a bad request. Let's say request.respond, and we can say status codes, this is one of our modules. Bad request. Text is too short, and there's some simple validation. Else, if it's greater than 5, then we consider that a valid operation, and we let that data be persisted. So by hitting save here, that's our server-side business logic in this case, a very simple example, going off and being persisted, and with that, that is now live. So I can jump back to my store app here, spin it up, and say, let's put 5 in. So this will go and save successfully. Great. But if I say 4, what will happen is that we're going to get that bad request back, and we've got the text here as well, and we've got a nice known type of exception here that we can go off and sort of wrap our calls with a nice try-catch operation and handle it nicely. So that's server script in a nutshell. Any questions on that? Yes? Yeah, so it's JavaScript, or basically that's injected into Node. So it's Node.js on the server side. So you can do things like require HTTP if you wanted to perform an outbound HTTP request. to another service, and you'll see that a bit later on. But yeah, it's JS. Who here likes the idea of writing JS on the server side? Okay, a couple guys. Who here would prefer C#? Okay. So you guys should definitely check out Glenn Block's session tomorrow. I've got a reference to it a bit later on. Today we don't support C#, but it's certainly something that we're seeing a lot of people wanting on the server side. So it's something that's sort of being worked on as we speak, and Glenn's the guy to drill in for more information on that. So let's jump into auth. So at the moment, we're just using the app key to authenticate users. Now, let's say you've got an application and you really want to know, you know, what's that user's identity, who is that user, and you want to store data for that particular user. Out of the box, we support social identity providers like Microsoft Account, Twitter, Facebook, and Google. Now, with these IDPs, basically what we can do is we can say, for our table-based data, we may want to add additional restrictions on top of this data. So an app key is a good way to sort of, you know, I guess stop people from just randomly finding your public URL and, you know, reading or writing data. An app key is sort of like the next level of, I guess, security, you could say. But people can still reverse engineer client apps. And if you saw in our code, we had our app key embedded within our client app. So typically people will want to go sort of that extra step. And in this case, we can authenticate users with those identity providers. Or we could go and restrict certain operations that only be executable by scripts or administrators of the service. Now, we'll see a demo of this in a second. But once we actually have an authenticated user, we can actually go off and implement policy within our mobile service if we wish. So that may be saying, you know, if the user is Nick, treat them as, you know, someone that can perform a specific operation, else, you know, it's someone else that we don't care about. So you can go off and create tables and implement, say, you know, some kind of role-based authentication that's more granular than what we provide out of the box, if you so wished. And the way we do that is that user parameter that's passed in, there's a level operation on there, and there's also a user ID operation on there. And with the both of those, essentially allows you to find out who the current user is and whether they're anonymous, authenticated, or an administrator of the service. So let's have a look at enabling auth. For this one, I think we'll just do Twitter. So I will need to, first step, go to permissions, set our insert permission on this table to say only authenticated users. In actual fact, I'll do it for each of the operations. So you can go and make each operation different if you so wish. So if you wanted everyone to be able to read a data set out, but perhaps only specific users to write in, you could say everyone in this case for read. I'm just going to set it to authenticated only for all of these. Now, to enable Twitter auth requires a small amount of configuration. The first thing here that we've done is just table permissions. So this has essentially stopped our app, actually. Let's close that and run it. This has stopped our app from being able to consume the data because we're not authenticated. Let's run this and you'll see that it'll throw back an error. So that's trying to load all of the data that's there as part of the startup of this. When you'll navigate to this form, it's trying to request the data, saying, hey, you're unauthorized to read that data. So what we can do now is we can go and turn on authentication for this particular user. What we need to do is a little bit of configuration for our mobile service here in the identity tab. If I click in, you can see that for each of those identity providers, Microsoft, Facebook, Twitter, and Google, simply you need to provide a client ID and client secret. So this is, who's implemented an auth flow before with any of these identity providers? A few people? Okay, so I'll show you how we do it with mobile services. It's basically identical to what you would have done already. You know, you go off, you configure the app within the identity provider, then you provide a redirect URL in that identity provider, and then that redirects back to the client. So in this case, we're going to go and say, let's configure Twitter. So on Twitter here, let me sign in to the Twitters. One, two, is that right? No, okay. yeah. what is my password? I think that's it. Don't tell him, okay? Okay. So we're going to log into the dev.twitter.com. And basically all of the identity providers that we talked about have a service similar to this. And here I can go and create my application. So I'm going to say create one here. We'll call it TechEdNZ13. TechEdNZ13 demo. This is my blog if you want to see the micro framework stuff for mobile services. Sorry, it's hard to type and speak and think all at once. Now, the most important thing here is really your callback URL, and this is part of the auth flow. So if you forget what your callback URL is, you can simply hit the dashboard, come here, and copy it off, and that's your target endpoint. So kiwi.azuremobile.net, you will read all of these, hit yes if you agree, and then you will try to figure out this thing. Dirds. Should be birds, it would be more interesting, but we do that, and now we've created our Twitter app. Now, the real thing that we need to take from this is our consumer key and consumer secret. We just drop back into our mobile services portal here, jump on the identity tab, come down and say Twitter, consumer key, consumer secret, hit save, and now our service is configured to allow users to authenticate with Twitter. If you wanted to authenticate with any of those identity providers, it's simply a matter of going off and configuring the app for that identity provider and putting it in. Now, the last thing we really need to do is say, how does this client app authenticate against this identity provider? Now, to do that, we simply come across here to VS, hit stop. I'm going to hook into on Navigated 2 in this case. Say async, and we can say await app.mobileservice, that's our client proxy, and then we can say login async. And we've got a enum here called Mobile Service Authentication Provider. You can see that we've got Facebook, Google, Microsoft account, and Twitter available there. So if you wanted to implement all of these, maybe you've got sort of a nice login list view with each of those identity providers. When you click it, it just routes to the appropriate event handler here, and you just provide the appropriate enum for that particular provider. So in any case, that's our auth done. So if I hit run now, we'll see that we're presented with a nice web authentication broker, but you haven't had to write all the scaffolding that you'd normally have to write with the web authentication broker class. Simply, we convert that into one line of code. We can go off. This is cached essentially in my password vault from a prior demo. Normally, you wouldn't have your username and password sitting in there. Hit authorize. So I've authorized that app to have access to that service, and now you can see we can read the data, say, hello world. So that's simply authentication. Those guys that had done this before by themselves, how easy was this comparatively? Awesome? Okay, cool. So we're on the mark. So one last thing I want to show you here now that we've got an authenticated user, so we can come back to our server script, and we can actually edit this to start doing things with the user. We can say something like item.userID is equal to user.userID. Item.level is equal to user.level. Now this will go off and dynamically add those columns for us the next time we write data to this service. So once that's saved there, we'll go off and say with user info, done. And then if we go back to browse here, you'll see that I'll be an authenticated user with a Twitter ID on our with user info. So that's simply auth. If you wanted to filter the subset of data going back, you could do that as well. I'll show that in Friday's session, and I'll also show you how to cache credentials. So that's auth. Who likes that? Yeah, it's pretty easy, right? It's awesome. So basically what it allows you to do is get the common stuff done up front and fast, and focus basically your efforts on, and I'll say the quote that Andrew Coates from Australia always says, focus your time and effort on writing the code that only you can write. This here gets the easy common stuff done up front. That typically would take time, maybe half a day, depending on your familiarity, but then allows you to go off and really focus on building great experiences in that client app without really having to worry much about the server side. So let's look at push notifications now. So who here has seen a push notification before on their device or Windows Store app? Lots of people, right? Who's actually been off and implemented that sort of workflow on any of the platforms? A couple people? Okay, so there's a lot of moving parts in these scenarios. And again, what we've tried to do here is make it really sort of straightforward and easy to do. So today I'll show you the VS 2012 approach. In 2013, which we'll go through on Friday, we've actually baked in a lot of automation for this process. This 15 minutes is basically a great foundation for you to understand how this workflow works. If you're going out and building this in Web API or something like that, you'd actually have to go off and implement a lot of stuff, and you'd need to understand this process. So let's look at it today. 2013 on Friday turns this into about 1 minute. But this is going to be 15. Are you ready? Am I talking fast enough? All right. So typical push notification workflow is as follows. Everything in blue is something that you, as a developer, need to write. Everything in green are services or APIs provided that you need to know how to interface with. So to send a push notification in a Windows 8 app in this case, it's quite similar across all the client platforms. But for Windows 8, you need to request what's called a channel URI. And that channel URI is essentially something you can post, say, a tile or toast update to. Once you have that channel URI, you can then go and say, let's store that with my cloud service, whether it's a mobile service, a web API, some PHP service that you've gone off and written. Essentially, you're offloading that channel such that your service, when something changes that's specific to the domain logic or the domain problem that your app is solving, say a weather service, the weather changes, and I'm interested in Redmond, I could pull all channels that are interested in Redmond and send a notification to them saying, hey, it's going to be sunny for the first time in forever. Right. Sort of applies here as well by the look of things. Yesterday was pretty good though. So once we have those channels, typically you'll authenticate against the push notification service. In this case, it's called the Windows push notification service. And then you'll push an XML payload that defines the template that you want to send, whether it's a little toast or a tile or whatnot. The notification service for any of those service providers will then deal with delivering that to the particular client, and then the client notification platforms will deal with surfacing that to the user. And then what you get is a nice notification like this. So what you've got here is essentially the start screen for Windows, and you can send push notifications to this. You can see there's a number of different template types there. This is Windows 8.1 preview. And you can see there's big square ones, there's little square ones, there's wide ones, there's ones with images, there's ones that are popping and peaking. These are all controlled by push notifications. And essentially, by sending a notification, you can draw your user back to your application. And that's the real key point of push notifications for Windows Store apps. Present the user with relevant and up-to-date information on that start screen, and they're going to click on your app and utilize it again, therefore gaining value from your app and not going and uninstalling it and replacing it with someone else's. So in any case, we can jump back here. Let me go on with the deck. The way we do this for Windows Store apps, essentially we provide a nice API in the push.wns namespace. It's got a number of functions available there to compose those XML templates. And what we've done is we've made it really easy so you don't have to work with XML to produce these. You just provide a nice little object, and then we'll go and deal with the XML serialization of that. We support for WNS toast, tile, badge, and raw notifications. We'll probably do toast today, maybe tile if we have time. And the key goal of this is to provide a simple to consume API that performs this with a little bit of configuration. And with that, let's jump into the config. So the first thing we're going to need to do, step one, was to request a channel. So if I come into my client app here, I'm going to go on the onLaunched, drop in async, and I've got some snippets here that we'll drop in, and then we'll walk through them in a sec. So the first thing you need to know about is the Push Notification Channel Manager. That's essentially your gateway to requesting a channel URI. So it's in the Windows Networking Push Notification namespace, and this exceptionally long method name, create push notification channel for application async, will request that channel. Does anyone think that's the longest channel in the... Anyone know a longer one? No? Okay, let me show it to you, since we're here anyhow, right? You can do secondary tile async. So what I want to point out there is if you're building like a weather app and you want to pin multiple tiles, say I'm interested in New Zealand, Auckland, I'm interested in Redmond, basically you can pin secondary tiles and you have a unique channel to each of those, and then you can actually drive notifications independently to each of those tiles. So we're going to say create push notification channel async. The next thing that I've got here is a simple entity. That's my DTO that's serialized over the wire. I'm just going to drop it in inline here for the sake of time. And essentially it's got an ID, a URI, that's your channel URI, and an expiry time for that channel. Channels expire, which is why we request a new channel every time the application launches. Now what's happening in the middle here? So first thing we do is we new up this channel. We take the channel URI that's returned by the push notification channel manager and the expiration time. Now ignore all of this guff for a second. The key thing that we do with that channel is to go and insert it async. So we just pass that up, it's going to go and persist it to a channel table. So let's create that channel table. Jump back out, we hit create and say channel. Right, so this channel table now will store my channel URIs. So returning back over here, what happens when you insert the channel the first time, you get a seeded int identity, and that is actually updated within your channel DTO. So after I perform insert, that'll have, say, identity 1, identity 2, identity 3, depending on what channel is pushed up. So that ID is set, and then I'm just storing this locally in local settings. The reason I'm doing this is every time I run this app, I don't want to write, you know, the same channel URI multiple times to the table, identity 1, identity 2, identity 3. If I'm then pulling back all those channels, I'm going to send like 4 push notifications, 5 push notifications to the one user. We only need it once. So this is just simply storing in local settings here the channel ID that's been persisted the first time around. And then on every subsequent launch of the application, the way I'm setting the ID here is I'm essentially saying, if there's anything in that local settings store, say ID 1, then push it in. If there's not, it's going to be null. Then I come here and say, I could equally have said if channel DTO ID is equal to null, insert, else if it was there, then we go and say perform an update. It's just a very simple way of managing that channel and just updating the one that's there. So that's that piece. We've created the channel table. Now what about the client config? The client needs to be configured for the auth process that occurs with WNS. A little bit on the client side, a little bit on the server side. I won't go into it, there's quite a lot in there. Has anyone implemented push for Windows Store apps before? Okay, I did it and I wrote an API for it. It took like 3 or 4 days because there's a lot to understand. You need to understand OAuth, you need to understand how to request a token from WNS, how to extract that token from the response, stuff it in basically the request headers when you're posting a notification payload. All of this clicking that we're going to do here saves you time, okay? that's the best way to understand it. So if I say select store, associate app with the store, you can simply sign in. This is the Windows Store dashboard. We provide a nice little GUI in VS for it. And it allows us to automate some things without actually having to browse out to the portal. So once I authenticate here, it's going to go and pull all of the apps that I've actually got registered in the Windows Store. So I'm going to In this case, today's Wednesday, but I'll use TechEd Tuesday. Let me check I don't have this guy installed here. Let me uninstall a couple of these guys. Install. We'll keep Kiwi. Okay. So TechEd Tuesday, hit next. Now what this is going to do, it's going to update my package apex manifest to have essentially the package name and publisher ID here. So with that, the client config is done. We've requested the channel and we've pushed up to the server. Client doesn't need to do anything else except define what type of tiles it supports. So by default, Toast is supported. If you want to have a wide logo like this, you need to come in and configure a default wide tile logo. And I'll show you why that is in a sec here. Let me grab something here. So hit save on that. Now that's configured a default tile. Essentially, your app, like this sports app, needs a default tile. And if there's not a notification present, just provides, you know, your branding for the application. So we need to specify a wide tile logo if we want to support that. You'll see that if you don't, you may have people pinned your app as small, you may have people pinned as medium, you may have people pinned as wide, or whatnot. That was funny. Okay. And in that particular application, you can see they're only supporting push to that medium-sized tile. So we can support push to all of those. So that's done, client. Let's look at the server-side config now. If we select the push tab, click in here, and simply what we've got is if you're doing APNS or GCM, you configure there. We're doing Windows in this case, so we need a client secret and package SID. So we can get this from the Windows dev portal, dev.windows.com. Now this is what that client-side ad store reference was doing for us automatically. The tooling in 2012 doesn't have any automation. The automation's added in 2013. I'll show you on Thursday. So TechEd Tuesday was the app which we selected. Click Edit. Sign in. Which is interesting that it's booted me. Okay. Renew your subscription. Oh, excellent. When did it expire? Oh, no, it expires. Well, this is sort of Redmond time. Oh, it's UTC. Okay. So it basically expired. I thought I renewed that. Okay. I'm not going to go and actually, well, let's try this. Let's see if we can just click renew and hope it uses my... 1 second, just in case. We don't want you guys seeing my Amex, or the recorded people, so bear with me, I'm sorry. Yeah, I renewed this before I left Redmond. It may have been under a different account. Seems to be a little bit slow here. Okay. We can bring you guys back because it's not showing my Amex. Hit next. If you've got a registration code, it's typically cheaper. I wasn't anticipating on showing you guys this workflow, so it's going to chew a little bit of our time, hopefully not too much. If it doesn't renew, we'll just have to abandon, and I'll just show you the server script, but we won't see the actual end result. So while that happens, let me at least show you the server script here. So we'll come back to the credentials. So once the credentials are there, we essentially go in and you can write script to then send a notification. And in this case, I've got a little snippet here called insert push toast. You can come across and I can control A, control V, drop that in. Now, if I scroll up here in a second, a little bit trigger happy on the save, there we go. We've got insert. Now we're saying, in this case, request execute. On successful insert to the DB, respond to the client so they can continue, and then go off and send a notification. We're passing the item here in this case. Then we say tables. This is a module that allows you to work with your tables without having to write T-SQL. If you want to write T-SQL, you can use the MS SQL object. So we say tables, get table channel. That will return the channel table. And then we simply say, now let's read the contents of that channel table. On success, it returns you an array of channels, and we say channels.forEach, and then each channel then is passed in as a parameter to this function, and I simply say push.wns send toast image text 03. So this is one of the template types for a toast. If we're sending tile, you'd say send wide tile image and text 01, 02, 03, 04. All of these different template types are defined on MSDN, and they've got a nice picture indicating what each will look like. This template, the XML payload, actually takes image source and two lines of text. It's got one that's the text from the item, and then just a public image here sitting up on the web. And of course, the URI from the client. So let's go back to my payment. Okay. Let's use this. Oh, no. Okay, it's unlikely you guys will guess, like, the number, right? I guess you could brute force it or something. I can just see my boss coming into my office next week. Nick, what's this $100,000 charge on your Amex in New Zealand? Okay. So, finally, we'll go through the workflow that you all didn't want to see. You can do it. Any questions while we wait on this? The 49 is annual, yeah. So it's an annual fee. But if you talk to your guys here at local Microsoft, they may have some of the codes that they can give you, which will give you a reduced rate or free. Thank you for renewing your subscription. Okay. I'm sure I'd done this already. Maybe I didn't submit the expense so it was paid or something. So we should be able now to go to dev.windows.com. Go back to the dashboard, select our TechEd Tuesday. Now, the server-side configuration for that push tab, it all sits in here under services. So this should be very familiar for those that have published a Windows Store app before. And we now select, we have an existing WNS solution or want to update our secret. Select this, many click-throughs, this is recorded. And we select authenticating our service. And these are basically the credentials for the server side. So, let me hit save on that. I'm not sure what I changed. Hopefully, I put some spaces in there. Dismiss, hit back, go to push, client secret, and package SID. So these are the server side credentials that are used to auth against WNS. So on hitting save now, we've basically got the entire workflow complete. Requested the channel on the client and configured the client. We saved that up to our mobile service in a channel table. On insert, we requested that channel, and then we composed a push notification of type toast in this case. And then we said push.wns send and sent a toast notification. And of course, we've configured our server-side piece here. So if I run this app now, you'll note that the server script that we edited was the to-item insert script. So when I insert an item now from my app, it will actually go off and send a push notification. Let's let this guy spin up here. Click in. I'll show you how to cache credentials on Friday so you don't get that popping up every time. And we say, hello, NZ. And, with any luck, it will be delivered. I'm not sure what the timing is on the... what was it that we just did? Oh, I know what's going on. That app was already running, so unlaunched wouldn't have fired. I don't think we'll have a channel here. Yeah, so we just need to run it so unlaunched fires. That'll register our channel. And then when we insert, we'll get our toast. Okay, this is basically some stateful stuff, which is not right. So TechEd Tuesday, this is because I used this app previously and local settings was storing ID 2 for that app. So in a typical scenario, you wouldn't have that there already. And the suspense is killing me. What about you guys? It better work, all right? don't you think it's going to be like low point in the presentation if it doesn't work? Hello, NZ, really? Hit save. You can do it. Let's check the channels there. Hit refresh. It's there. One more time. This time. Wondering if I saved before the channel was insert. Okay. Oh, well, that's not cool. Let me see here. Function. All.log r. This is like, let's do this, let's do this. I'm losing all my bracketing here. Review. I'm absolutely horrible here right now, sorry guys. Let's just say success, error, you can say comma, function, r for response. I'm losing my wushu function. Log r. Okay, and then we say function. At least we'll know what's going on here. I'm guessing it's something to do with the payment. what are you doing? Save. Actually, show you the help box here. What's the format? Format. Find next, format, Control Alt F. Control A, Control Alt F. There we go. It seems I've got an extra character here. Okay. You're closing there. You're closing there. Let's just save it, see if it works. I'm sure I've just butchered this thing now. I can't see it on the... Oh no, terrible. Sorry guys, I've got a recorded version of this online. Yeah, okay, I'm gonna stop this right there. Consider that if my code was right and I had paid that before we got into the demo, it would work. There is a recorded version on Channel 9, so do check that out. The last thing I really wanna just point out here, because we're sort of running a little low on time, we've looked at data, push, identity. The two key other services here are custom API. Custom API provides a place where you can write script that executes whenever you request it, and it's not tied to a CRUD operation. So you might want to write a send email method or something like that, and that will allow you to just invoke this API. It'll go off, send it. You don't need to work with data. The other thing that we've got here is the scheduler. So the scheduler allows you to execute script on a schedule. And if we say something like, do something, I had a demo prepared, but we won't look at it today. But essentially, what you can do with these are background tasks, like perhaps go and hit that weather service API and pull back the current weather forecast for areas of interest. It may be going and polling blog RSS feeds and pulling back the blog posts and then sending an update to the tile, perhaps, to say that that blog has been updated. But to create them is really quite straightforward. Simply create it, click in, you've got script, and in the script tab here, you can write whatever you want. And that's a script that will execute whenever it runs on your schedule. Now, as far as scheduling is concerned, you can set the schedule to be by minute, by day, by hour, or by month. And you can say every 15 minutes or whatnot. So by hitting enable here, that script will now execute on a 15-minute schedule. And at the moment, it's just doing a simple console.log operation. When you're sort of debugging and testing these scripts, we finish at 10, right? 10 past? Okay. When you're debugging and executing these scripts, you can simply hit the run once option before enabling the schedule, and that'll allow you to sort of print out any logging or diagnostics information you want to be able to determine, you know, am I doing something right in the logic or wrong within the logic for my code? And here is the console log operation that was essentially executed in that default template. The last thing I'll show you here, API I'll do on Thursday, is scale. So on the scale tab, you can basically come across and scale out your services. So we've got a free tier that enables up to 500,000 API calls a month. So with that, you can basically do quite a lot of things. You could even build an app for a small to medium enterprise. Free tier, 500,000 API calls a month, and 500 unique devices. That's the limitation there. You can go standard, premium, and these are basically, you know, beefier machines, dedicated cores. And from here, you can sort of start scaling out your instance count. Or if you don't want to be coming in and doing things manually, you can simply come across and configure auto scale, and it will scale based on how hard that API is being hit, up when needed and down when not needed. And with that, that is basically what I wanted to show you guys. Let me pull this up here so you can see what's included in each. So free tier, 10 services, 500 active devices, 500K API calls. Standard, I believe it's around $29 to $30 a month. And premium, you're getting up to 15 million per unit in terms of API calls. So if we come across here and you want to check this stuff out, you can go and use the free tier, of course, without any cost at Windows Azure. If you're interested in looking at or costing it for a solution rather than sort of kicking the tires on it, you can hit pricing, come into mobile services. You can see here, of course, that that's the detail from the slide. Standard is $25 a month, premium $199, and free is, of course, free. So with that, thank you. I apologize for the couple demo failures. I'll tweet a link to the recorded version of this, which has a working end-to-end. And please do not do anything with my AMAX.